Hi, Mackenzie.
Hey, Lamar.
So this movie we're doing today is called Cool Runnings, and it's from a 1993, I believe. And I was doing some reading on this, and I found out that, this is based on the Jamaican bobsled team, the famous Jamaican bobsled team. And apparently the studio behind this, Disney, wanted them to do more stereotypical Jamaican accents of what Americans think Jamaicans sound like, because they wanted it to be, I guess, accessible, for lack of a better word. And the actors in this wanted to do a more traditional, how Jamaicans talk for the most part. It went as far as the studio threatening to fire the director of this film if he couldn't get the actors on board with this. And the actors sort of came back and were just like, we don't want to do Sebastian the Crab voice just for the sake of, a wider audience. But the director unfortunately just sat him down and was like, look, if you guys don't do this for me, you're going to get me fired. Please don't get me fired, But I guess all of that to say, I found that to be an interesting story when I watched this, because before I read that, I was sitting there like, is this, I don't think this is, this seems like very over the top. And I'm not an expert on the subject, but either way, all that to say, Mackenzie, I want to hear you do a acceptable Jamaican accent, but don't make it offensive and don't make it racist, but do a good Jamaican accent for me, please.
Is that a real request? You just laid out this whole thing of there's this whole fake accent that I don't know. Okay. Let's see. I don't know how to what I have to reference it is this movie. So, ooh, I have a quote from the movie. Can I try that? I'm gonna try
Yeah, you found a loophole because you're allowed to do quotes. Then you're just paying homage. Yeah.
this bitch loves a loophole. All right. So, Sanka, you're my best friend, and we've been through a whole heap together. And I really, really need you. I feel like that's pretty close
Dude,
to what he did.
that might be the best impression. That might be the only impression I've gotten you to do on the pod. So, round of applause for Mackenzie out there. I'm very proud of you. And
Thank
best
you.
of you,
Thank
it
you.
wasn't offensive because you were just, impersonating a character.
Did what I could. Where's yours? I want to hear it. If you're gonna make me throw down, it's you're up.
Well, if anybody heard the episode on A League of Their Own, you're probably going to see some similarities from my Christopher Walken impression, because my Jamaican impression is just like, hey, it's me. I'm from Jamaica, innit? I'm walking here. So, again, not offensive, except to maybe Christopher Walken. I don't know. I don't know where that falls.
I feel like that offends a lot of people, to be honest, in various ways.
Do we have any listeners in Jamaica? If so, we lost that one.
We
Sorry.
lost the one. We lost the one just now.
Yeah.
Welcome back to We Drink and We Watch Things. I'm Mackenzie.
I'm Lamar.
And today we are closing out March Madness, actually, with another fun one. Pretty light, pretty funny, a little unexpected, Cool Runnings,
Yeah, the
which
most
I'm super
famous sled name since Citizen Kane, maybe Rosebud, I
excited.
think. Probably the second most famous in history.
That's my guess. Maybe the most famous, actually, based on timing. But it's a great sled name, to be honest. I love it. I think it's great. But I think it was an unexpected winner of our bracket competition. But we can get into that in a second. And let's chat drinks. What are we drinking today?
So today we are drinking some traditional Jamaican sunrise rum punch, and this is pretty easy to concoct. It's a few ingredients. You can find your own proportions online, but the one I made is just half cup of pineapple juice, half cup of orange juice, the third cup of dark rum, a half ounce of lime juice. You got a tablespoon of grenadine syrup, and basically you just mix up all the juice and the rum together. Put that into a separate glass, and then you put the grenadine at the bottom, because then it makes it this fancy, like, I don't know if yours did this, but it's got like the red at the bottom, and then it sort of fades up into yellow, so you get the sunrise effect there.
It's such a pretty color. You guys can't see it, but we'll share it with you later. But yeah, and we'll share the recipe as well. So, but all that to say, delish. Cheers.
Cheers.
All right. Well, we got to say again, this is a little bit of an unexpected choice. I say expected and unexpected. We did, in fact, choose a number of films for our bracket based on. If you are new to this month, this is our version of March Madness, which is, a bunch of sports films in the month of March. We've done baseball, we did wrestling, we did football, and then we weren't sure how to pick the final one. We were torn about, does it need to be basketball? Does it need to be something right. else? We had all these other fun sports that we thought would be cool to include. So we threw in, I think, what was it? It was ice skating. It was hockey.
Yeah.
Bobsledding.
To your credit, you were the one who came up with the idea of, rather than doing a bunch of basketball movies or to force feed it, we were like, what if we pick like one of each? And you had that idea. So we ended up with a wide variety, and I thought it played out pretty well. And Space Jam was just destroying the competition. Maybe yeah. it was seeded in an easier bracket, but I did not expect Cool Runnings to kick Space Jam's ass the way it did.
Neither did I. I mean, not because I don't love Cool Runnings. We'll get into it later, but mm-hmm. like, this is a very nostalgic film for me. I love it.
Yeah.
But I just expected most people to be aware of and be nostalgic about Space Jam. So,
right.
And a couple people were a little sad pants that Space Jam didn't make the cut. But maybe we'll talk about it at some point. Either way, it's a classic. It's great. But I'm kind of excited to talk about this one. I'm not going to lie. I'm super stoked. I may or may not have lobbied a couple of people to pick Cool Runnings. I'm not going to lie. But
shady shit going on. You just gave those people who are sad pants about it are now going to cry fake news and say that the election's rigged as you're going around doing shady things.
I can't vote for them. I can just ask them to vote for the best choice.
I do not hide my principles. I go on and vote as soon as I post the poll. It's a democracy.
I save my vote for if there needs to be a tiebreaker, I guess is the thing. But I also mean I don't vote for them physically. I don't vote for our fans. So they can pick whatever they want. I just ask them, you know, why wouldn't you pick blah, blah, blah? Because, you know, my lobbying is gentle and nice.
I think you're on the wrong career path right now. But.
It's all sales, really. So anyway, let's go over some basics before we dig into the funness that is this film. So Cool Runnings, as you said, 1993, got pretty solid ratings, to be honest. Checked them out. So the IMDb rating, for example, is 7 out of 10. And the Rotten Tomatoes is, I don't remember which is which, but it's 76% and 81% respectively. Mm-hmm. So you know, pretty highly rated film. Most people really enjoyed this film. And it's funny because like I sort of thought it was a dark horse film. Seems like there's a lot of fans. Like, I just remember growing up with it, but I don't know. It's one of those movies you think like you and your family are the only ones who ever watched it because you don't ever hear anything about it ever again later. But it's really popular. People really like this movie.
So I have two pieces of information here. The first one is to let you know that this was my first time sitting down and watching Cool Runnings from front to back. I'd seen pieces when I was a kid.
What?
I've seen pieces as an adult. But I've never actually sat down and watched the whole movie from beginning to end. So I apologize, I guess.
Wow. I'm just shooketh. I'm just surprised. Yeah. Well, I guess I'm not that surprised, but I sort of like thought you had in all of our conversations about it. But anyway, okay, well, that's awesome.
Yeah. So I'm going to give the perspective of somebody who doesn't view this through nostalgia goggles. And I think I might irritate a few people, but I'm going to admit up front that had I seen this as a kid, I think I would have loved it. I think there's a lot of things that this has that, you know, movies that I did see like Little Giants or Heavyweights, like there's some silliness in there. And granted, those aren't true stories like this one. So this has a little more backbone to it. So I'm going to give it that leeway of if I'd seen this when I was a kid, I probably would have loved it. But I'm also going to be real about watching it in 2024. There's a lot of misses for me.
Wow. I can already tell y'all that not okay. I don't know. Let me just say, I just want a disclaimer. I did not know he was going to come into this with this heat.
Coming in hot.
All you nostalgic folks on my team, I apologize in advance. I didn't know this was where this was going. I just assumed this was going to be a glorious review of this great movie. And I am shocked.
I am not going to take this drink from a Jamaican sunrise to a Jamaican sunset today. It is not going to be. I'm not saying it's a bad film. I'm just saying nostalgia goggles makes it probably better than it is. Now, that being said, the second thing that I wanted to touch on was to your point about how many people love this and how popular this was. At the time that it came out, not only did people really enjoy it, it was the highest grossing live action Disney movie at the time.
Yeah.
And that might not sound like much because, again, it's 1993. But thinking about what else that includes, we're thinking about movies like Hocus Pocus, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, The Mighty Ducks, all those had come out prior. So the fact that this was the top performing live action box office for Disney at that time says, again, a lot about how many people really enjoyed and connected with it.
Yeah, it vibes for me. Apparently, you're the weirdo who doesn't understand that this movie is great, but whatever. totally checks out that this was the highest grossing live action film. I'm sure it doesn't hold up anymore with however many Disney has done now. But yeah, this was kind of a
rarity.
Would
it make it more acceptable for me to tell you that my father was killed by a Jamaican bobsled?
Because you're literally lying.
No, it's trauma. In a dream, it happened in a dream. Okay, truth time. Yes. Okay, I won't make excuses. I apologize, everybody, that I don't think I'll ever watch it again. I won't. Sorry.
What? No. Oh my God. This is so wrong. I can't. Okay, it's fine. I'm fine. Whatever.
Let's talk about the director. You're making me sad.
So yes, let's get to some tactical details because I don't want to fight with you yet. I'm not ready. All right. Director, some basic deets. Let's dig into that. So our director for this one is John Turteltaub. How do you think you say that? Do you think I said it right?
It's weird because I see it and in my head I'm reading it, but I'm not actually saying it. So this is the first time I'll say it out loud. I would say John Turteltaub. Yeah. Or Turteltaub?
Taub. I feel like Taub is the thing.
We'll hit him up on Twitter or X.
Yeah. I'm going to text him later. I'm sure he'll be willing to tell me immediately. yeah. So anyway, this guy, he is the director, but he's most well known for, he's produced a ton of stuff. You know, he's produced a lot of stuff. He has directed some stuff. One of the things that he directed, though, that I saw and immediately stood out to me was The Meg. Have you ever seen that?
Yes. And I was shocked by that because I saw a couple of his earlier pieces. He did another a childhood favorite of mine called Three Ninjas. Again, if I were to watch it now, I'm just saying, guys, it's probably not as good as I remember it being. But Three Ninjas had a...
Three Ninjas, by the way, rated 5.3 on IMDb. Okay, continue.
You're putting it in the hands of the people, just like you kind of do with our Instagram polls. But he did that. He has this weird history because he's been working for decades. And so he did these children's movies in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. And then he moved into doing things like the National Treasure series with Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, he did.
And yeah, The Meg of all things years ago.
He did also do The Kid, which if you've never seen The Kid with Bruce Willis is a great film as well. A little bit nostalgic too. Okay. But yeah, that's a great movie too. So he's done a lot of really good stuff. But The Meg stood out to me as like, are we fucking kidding? I never saw it, to be honest, but it looked like such a joke. So I just was like, this guy.
It was fine. If you like shark movies, like you.
I love that you have seen The Meg start to finish. And this was your first Cool Runnings watch all the way through. Okay, that's fine.
I'm a big Statham guy, and I'm a big giant shark guy. It's not that hard. We've been over this, Mackenzie. You put a Transformer or a giant shark in a movie, I'm probably going to see it. But it's a decent movie. It's not incredible. But if you like shark movie, not just Jaws, but just, you know, Deep Blue Sea. If you liked Deep Blue Sea, you'll probably like The Meg, honestly.
I feel like I've seen Deep Blue Sea, but I can't remember it at all. But I did love Jaws. And who doesn't love Jaws? Let's be honest. But yeah, The Meg looks so absurd to me. And also Jason Statham, I was like, really? He's in this? Like, this doesn't feel like the vibe for him. I know action is his whole vibe, but I still felt like that was a weird offshoot. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. That's our director today. He's done a hot mix of things. And he does a great job with this as well as apparently several other things. And if at the very least, you know him from National Treasure and he did great at that. But yeah, we have a team of writers for this one. Including like it's another one of those like story situation versus screenplay situation. So we've got story by Lynn Seifert. What are with these names today trying to challenge me? Seifert? I don't know.
Lynn Seifert.
Seifert? Okay, great. And then Michael Ritchie, which I didn't look into, but I wonder if he's any relation to Guy Ritchie. Anyway, that's the story. Okay. The story of the two of these folks. And then the screenplay was done, same thing, by Lynn Seifert, Tommy Swerdlow, and Michael Goldberg. But I read some stuff that makes it seem like it's pretty much Tommy Swerdlow, like did the majority of the writing.
Yeah, I feel like whenever you have a true story and you're adapting that into what does this look like on film, maybe you need those multiple teams of can you add some stuff in here to make it juicier and more action-packed or more dramatic. And then you bring in, once you've got that sort of table of contents. Then you bring in the writing team to really put all the jokes and whatnot in there. I did like, when I looked into these guys' history, Tommy Swerdlow and Michael Goldberg also wrote Little Giants, which is another favorite of mine as a kid. They wrote, actually, I think just Tommy ended up doing The Grinch, but I think it was The Bad Grinch, the one that doesn't get a lot of love. I think it was one of the animated ones. And then he also did, not, I think last year, and I don't remember if he won an Oscar for this, but the new Puss in Boots, The Last Wish, he wrote that one too.
The Last Wish was nominated, in case you were curious, last year for Best Animated Feature. So he got some recognition at the very least. And The Grinch that he did was the newer one with Benedict Cumberbatch. So that was like 2018-ish, which I understand why people don't love it, but it was not bad. I thought it was kind of funny. Anyway, he does a good job. And also, let's be honest, there's always one person who does all the work in the group project, right? Apparently, that is Tommy Swerdlow.
Yeah, I think he said, and this, I wasn't going to state this fact, but just because you said that, he was quoted as saying the only line of the script that he himself did not write was the repetition of the, "Hey, Senka, you dead?" That's the only line that was brought to him as like the core story, I guess, when he got it, but he wrote.
Well, apparently there was like an OG script, like an original script that he didn't write. And then he came in and rewrote almost the entire script. And the only thing that he wrote, didn't write, rather, was that line where he, and it ends up being, as we know, reused throughout. So, which I think is great. He took the good bits. He was like, all right, that's good. Also, what does that say about whoever wrote it the first time? Anyway, it's good.
I think the lesson here is to learn that, so the trick, if you want longevity in Hollywood, is just make fucking kids movies, because there's always going to be kids. Political things are going to change. Adult interests, as far as action and what they want out of their dramas and their romances and everything, going to change. Kids movies are always going to be there. So just make movies for children.
That's a great point, actually. I mean, if you think about it, like, I'm a grown adult with no children. I got nephews and nieces, of course, and I love that. But I don't have any kids, and I will totally see like a kid's movie. And not just because of Oscars, but like Moana was bomb. That's a recent one that I was like, I obviously want to see. Encanto, same thing. Like, that's true. Those are the most, you know, those are the most timeless sometimes. That's cool.
Yeah. You know, I love Coco, and I actually just watched Zootopia for the first time like 3 nights ago and really enjoyed that too.
Zootopia is so good. And it's Jason Bateman is hilarious in that.
Yes.
Shout out Smartless, his podcast. If we keep shouting them out, they're eventually going to shout us back out, right? Like, that's how,
if that's how it works, then we should just do 5 minutes of podcast plugs to start every episode before we even just make that
tag
the cold open.
Just, hey, out, just
please,
at,
everyone,
at mention all these parts. I'm into it. Let's do it. All that to say, we've got a good script here. I think it's no one can argue that the script is poorly written. I think it's very well written, and there's some really good speeches in it that we will actually get into later. But I think it's very well written, and shout out to Tommy, who apparently did the vast majority of the group project. So we will also get into some major cast and crew stuff really quick. And a lot of these folks you probably know, so I'm not going to dig deep on their credits. Of course, the famous, the legendary John Candy is our coach of this bobsled
team. Why are you starting
team
with the white guy?
Well, you know, because I'm a racist. I'm so glad that you
there it is.
I'm so glad
right
you called
there
it out.
I knew, no, because watching this, I thought it was, I was like, I don't think this was intentional by Disney, but maybe it was. But when they crashed their sled in the training on the island, and the cops show up because they crashed it into their cruiser or whatever, and John Candy just walks down and exerts his privilege, and he's like, nope, they're good. These
they're
four
good
Jamaican 100%. Kids didn't do anything wrong. Get out of here. Just tells the cops off. So, you know, it just continues. It just never ends with these people, but
I love Lamar's ongoing vigilance against male white privilege. Like, this is an ongoing theme, and I can't, it makes me so happy and proud. But yes, he is the top listed cast member, probably because he's the most famous of the cast. Let's be honest.
That's fair. That is fair.
It is fair, right? So he's our incredible coach. He's a funny guy. He's also the owner, recipient rather, of some great speeches in this film, and he delivers them with a bang. So we'll get into that. But also the main dude from the Jamaican bobsled team is Leon Robinson. He plays Therese Bannock. And I, fun fact, had a super huge crush on him when this movie came out. I was like, he cute. Anyway.
When the movie opens with him doing the sprint, right? And I saw his face. And then when he goes to the girlfriend's house, I was just like, he looks like somebody modern day. Like, he's that classic handsome.
Classic handsome.
I don't know who I'm thinking of. It's not Sterling K. Brown, but there's another famous actor right now who I'm just like, this is like the prototype for this other guy that eventually came along. And he only has one name, so it's, you know, two syllables. Easy to put on a marquee.
Now I'm trying to think of who you're thinking of, and I'm being distracted by that. But anyway, yes, he's classically handsome man. He has this great little smirk smile that's super cute. And yeah, you get him right at the beginning of the opening of the little, he's practicing his sprints and all of that. And I don't know much about him other than this film. I don't think he's done a lot. He just goes by Leon now, I can tell you that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is a great showing for him. He's obviously pulls this cast together. And then my favorite one on the list is Doug E. Doug for a number of reasons.
Did you look up if that was his real name? I didn't.
I looked up his Wikipedia, and that's what it says. Okay. I don't, you know, so I guess so. But also Doug E. Doug, one, that is his name. Two, that he plays Sunka, who is the funniest fucker in this movie and makes just such a great appearance. So we love him. He does a great job. We also have Raul D. Lewis, who plays Junior Bevel. So he's the one with the dad, overbearing father, and he just, you know, mm-hmm. only goes by Junior, and he gets the great hype speech later that we'll talk about. But he's also super handsome, but he's definitely like the young baby of the team in this one. And then we also have our final bobsledder of the team is Malik Yoba, who plays, wait for it, I hope you got this reference, guys, Yul Brynner. Which
I didn't get the reference. What's the reference?
He is a famous actor, like a famous actor in Hollywood who's done some old classics like the original Magnificent Seven, for example, he did. Okay. And I think even The King and I, for example, he plays the king and super racist nowadays. But anyway, he's a white guy who plays, a Taiwanese king. But he is a classic actor that is super famous in Hollywood. And it is unknown to me why this guy's name is Yul Brynner. I thought that was so random. It's so weird. But he just commits to it. And it doesn't feel like a very Jamaican name. I don't know. But he does a great job. And he's also the spicy one of the crew. He's very salty all the time.
Yeah, and he wants to live at Buckingham Palace, we find out later in the film. So good for him. You know, have goals.
I mean, first of all, that's a great goal. Number two, they make fun of him so bad. It makes me really kind of sad for him. I hate that moment. Anyway.
It's weird. I recognized him. He was the first one I recognized as the characters were popping up. And I couldn't pick out where I knew him from. And he was on this really obscure Fox show called New York Undercover. It was only on for like four seasons in the late 90s. And that's where I knew him from. And I don't remember a lot of the other actors moving on to much else. I know that Leon is still acting. He was a detective on some show in the last 3 to 5 years, but I don't remember what the show was. And I think I just figured out who his facial structure reminds me of. I think it's Mahershala Ali. Their eyes, their shape, their face structure. I was
they
just
also
like,
have
he's
that
like
same
really
great
good
smile.
Looking.
They have yeah, that same yeah. great smile. I think that's it too. Yeah, you're totally right. They're really good. But yeah, so that's the core bobsled team. We've got some guest appearances by some other folks. Nobody super notable that you would probably know, but a handful of character actors and things. But that's the core team. That's who we spend the most of our time with. And we also have a score by Hans Zimmer, which
fucking
I realized.
Hans Zimmer,
ladies and gents. I felt the need to call that out because I feel like we've talked about music and score a lot in our chats, but we haven't really been calling it out. And I think for this one, among many others, it's super impactful. So,
I mean, to be fair, Hans Zimmer has scored probably every film that we've done so far. So we knew we'd get around to him eventually. Look at his credits. He's got like 250 or something. And that's just for composing. That's not even for when he's helping with soundtracks or any other component of the music in the film. That's just when he's the main composer. So that is just bonkers. I mean, you guys know him. Yeah. He just did the Dune movies most recently. Mm-hmm. He's done almost every Christopher Nolan film. He did the Pirates of the Caribbean score. Just Google Hans Zimmer best scores and you'll be like, holy shit, I love all of those.
Basically, he's done everything that I love. Exactly. So brilliant. Goes without saying. We love him. But yeah, super excited to hear him again. And I didn't remember that about this movie. Of course, is when you're a kid, you're not paying attention to who's doing the score. So that was really cool to see. But also want to do a quick plot summary for those of you who maybe are new here, weirdo. This is
First, I lost us the Jamaican listeners, and now you just alienated anyone who this is their first episode. We are trying to build a base, and we are doing a terrible job.
Well, we're being authentic while we do it, though. So.
That is true. We're being ourselves, everyone. These are not characters. This is just how Mackenzie and I talk all the time. We're kind of assholes. Sorry.
It's true. Thank you. I'm glad you're aware. Other assholes will find us, is what I'm saying. That will be our base. But
All right.
Anyway, so all that to say, the plot summary here, really brief. So when a Jamaican sprinter is disqualified from the Olympic Games, he enlists the help of a dishonored coach to start the first Jamaican bobsled team. And a little asterisk I will add there is that on his bobsled team are the people, or at least one person, who's responsible for him being disqualified in the first place. So that's super interesting as we get onto it. But that's a high level. Anything else you would add?
No, I don't think so. I think from a story perspective, we've already pointed out that it's loosely, I mean, it's based on a true story. The circumstances are true. They even use some of the actual race footage from the 1988 Olympics in this, of the Jamaican bobsled team and the other teams. But yeah, there's obviously it's exaggerated. They spice it up. The characters in this are completely fictional. They're not even the real names of the folks that were in it. But if you were to tell me, hey, Disney made a 1993 movie about a true story, I would expect it to be a little dressed up and sort of just like, let's go off the foundation and do whatever the hell we want with it to make it more interesting.
Yeah, I think that they did a really good job of overall integrating like the, so it is based on a true story, but I would say loosely, right? And yeah. So they did a good job of integrating some key features of the true story, then also adding on to that and or changing it slightly. I think one of the biggest standouts for me is that they're not super well received, which we'll get to, but they actually were in real life, which I think is great. So
they didn't need to raise money. They were sponsored. The team wasn't even started, unfortunately, by Jamaicans directly anyway. It was two American businessmen who were staying there and saw an opportunity, and they're the ones who came up with the concept and then funded the team. But I don't think that waters down how inspirational the story is and the morals that it's trying to get across. So yeah, take that true story with a grain of salt, though.
And there are aspects of it that are true, like them having to appeal, being, you know, qualified for the games, but they just happen at different moments. So certain things are true. They just put them in the plot at a more dramatic moment that made more of an impact, I would say. But to your point, some of the footage they use is really good. And I think the majority of the footage that you're referencing that they use from the actual games, a lot of it is the actual crash footage, which we'll get into later. But a lot of it's their crash footage, which there's nothing they could have done about that. So we'll get into that. But I think, you know, we kind of probably want to go through, we're not going to go through the plot point by point, even if just in the interest of time. But I think the high level that I would say is that you get this snippet of them in Jamaica, where we have our kind of main character who is aspiring to go to the Olympics as a sprinter, which is a wildly different sport than bobsledding. And my question to you, and I asked this of somebody else the other day, of like, what a fucking pivot. Like, what a crazy pivot to be like, I would like to be a sprinter and I am also awesome at it. But then I get tripped in my trials. There's nothing I can do about it. And I'm not willing to wait 4 years. So I'm going to become a bobsledder. Like, what the fuck?
It just goes to show, kids, bobsled, the Winter Olympics are a fucking joke. You can do anything you want there. Why, if you fail at the Summer Olympics, just take up curling, because they train for this in like a few months and they're just like, they're automatically, there's some funny pitfalls of the training montages and stuff, but it's like, oh, apparently this isn't that hard. And I even wrote down later in the movie when East Germany comes into play of like, I cannot imagine that bobsledding is this competitive where people are shit talking each other at the bar and like, you don't belong in bobsledding. This is a serious sport. And they're just giggling like, it's not really that serious. I just can't imagine that.
I also can't imagine that. But I also love that you just lost us anyone who's not in the state of Texas. You were like, listen, there's no value to winter sports at all. Like, wow.
I do love hockey. I like hockey. Oh, okay.
So. Guys, all the hockey fans, join us because Lamar likes hockey. No, I agree with you, though. There's a there's some competitiveness right out of the gate that you're sort of, I think you are unexpected to me. But the one of the things I thought was interesting is that the two businessmen, again, we're going to marry maybe a little bit of the true story and the fake story. But part of the true story is that these businessmen saw the push cart derby races that they were doing in Jamaica. Yes,
they were inspired for sure.
Right, which is what Sonka does and we love and think are super funny. This is where we are first introduced to his lucky egg, by the way. Mm-hmm. And he's the best push cart derby driver in all of Jamaica. And they saw a race like that and they were inspired and said it looked very similar to bobsledding to them. And that's what prompted them to want to start this team. But I just think in the fictional version, it is such a weird twist of I'm going to be a sprinter and I'm going to go then to bobsledding. He's like, I will go to the Olympics under any fucking circumstances.
He wants to be, I had written this down in my notes. He wants to be Usain Bolt, famous Jamaican sprinter.
Yes.
He ends up being, wait, let me look at my notes. Nimroy Turgot. He was on the Jamaican bobsled team like a year ago or 2 years ago. So just wanted to get that right. Shout out Nimroy. Like,
if you weren't sure, Lamar doesn't watch the Winter Olympics, clearly. It's not his vibe. But I do think it's fair to say in this movie, it's super cute that you get introduced to these characters like Asanka, who does the derby and is really funny. He's the funniest part of this movie throughout,
agreed,
I think,
agreed,
in my opinion. And, you know, and he keeps Doris kind of on his toes. He's kind of the foil to Doris, really. He's the silly foil to Doris's persistent seriousness. You see it as he's training, you see it as they're at the games and he's like, no, I'm not going to go to dinner, I'm just going to study the turns, all these things. But he's such a funny, fun character. But it's really heartbreaking to watch him, Doris, that is, lose his sprint, because everyone is like, everyone knows he's going to go to the Olympics, he's going to go. Mm-hmm. He's tripped by, spoiler alert, someone who ends up being a bobsled member of his team later. And what's interesting to me is you see a really slow-mo shot of him being just totally devastated by that. And I thought that was such an impactful shot of, you really got to feel for a split second of the gravity of how that would probably feel, of you're literally just watching your Olympic hopes run away from you and it was nothing that you did. So it's super heartbreaking, and we start off with that, but he jumps right back up from it. I mean, not literally in that moment, but a pretty quick turnaround of like, I've got to figure something else out.
Yeah, I was going to call out, I do, one of the things that I do appreciate this is I think it's shot very well. That shot you're talking about, mm-hmm, where he's laying in the dirt and he's got the dirt smudge on his face and we're weighing it and taking in that emotional moment.
Yeah.
Even the stunts when they're doing the downhill practice and they're having to time the cart crashing with the person running behind and tripping over the cart. Like, I was like, holy shit, like that looks pretty damn good. It doesn't look fake in any way. And there's a lot of really good, directing stuff to go off of there. But backtracking to Sanka a little bit, I wanted to shout out about him. When we first meet him, I thought two things were very funny. I liked that he has all the kids on the island saying nursery rhymes about his name. Thought that was very clever. Like, local celebrity, why not?
Obviously. And if anybody's going to be, it's going to be him.
Yes. And I also loved his catchphrase of just get back to work. The kids are like, yeah, Sonka's the best, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yeah, just get back to work. Fix my racing car. This is very serious business. It's just as serious as bobsledding is in the Olympics, apparently. So.
I mean, they're apparently pretty similar enough to inspire a whole team. But I think he's super funny. And he is, again, if anybody's going to be the celebrity on the island, it totally makes sense that it would be him. He also has this really funny conversation. So, you know, Doris goes and lobbies for them to become this new bobsled team, lobbies for funding, which they don't get. And this is why, you know, what sets kind of the fundraising and all these things in motion of them being the underdog and all these things. But one of the things that Sonka says to him, he's like, igloos, Eskimos, and ice. I'm cold just thinking about it. He's like, I'm going to go take a hot shower. You know, so it's so funny that he's like, oh, we're Jamaican. Like, you want us to a bobsled?
Right,
like,
right.
I just feel like his reaction in the film is just so much more accurate to what you would assume. You're like, we are built for the heat. We are not built to go into the... I'm Texas born and bred. I would not bobsled. I would be like, my body is not built for this. And Doris is just trying to talk him into it. And he just wants a hot shower.
Yeah. Did you read in your research who they originally wanted in this role?
a couple people. Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
There was like, you know, Denzel Washington, for example, I think was one of the originals. And
well, so I had read that Denzel, they wanted him as Dereese, as sort of the main guy. Mm-hmm. And then Eddie Murphy was their first choice to play Sanka. And even when I hear you say the lines, yeah, I can hear it in Eddie Murphy's voice potentially. So I see that. But apparently they just could not afford them. And Eddie and Denzel were like, oh, are you serious? No, we're good.
They also wanted Wesley Snipes as Yule, which I remember being deeply appropriate. Yeah, deeply appropriate. Yeah. And then I think it was Marlon Wayans as Junior. Like, same thing, actually. It was this, their alternates were all very fitting. But I actually love that they had these relative unknowns as the character, because I think they're able to bond and be equal in a way that you wouldn't with a Denzel Washington star power and a Wesley Snipes star power and all of that. Like, you wouldn't be able to like have Wesley Snipes be a kind of side character like a Yule, you know what I mean? Like that kind of almost doesn't fit. Not that he's a side character, but you know what I mean? He doesn't get as much center screen time star power, and he's just going to be somebody who steals a scene and people fan out about and stuff like that. So I think it worked out better with people that they chose.
Yeah, you're talking about they end up going with a cast where one guy only has a first name, Leon, and the other guy's embarrassed to use his real name. His real name is probably Douglas Edward Douglas, but he has to go by Dougie Doug.
It's so much cooler that way, though.
The things people do in Hollywood compromise. It is much cooler, I'll be fair, but he wouldn't have gotten this role without it.
But straight up, they're liars. Let's be honest. That's what the movies are all about. They just lie.
Remember VH1's like Behind the Music? They would tell you all these fucked up stories about like, I want that about the cast of like, why does Douglas Edward Douglas refuse to use his real name? It's like, I had to do it.
Need to become film journalists and go dig up some fucking drama, and then we'll have little bonus eps for you guys. But that could be great. Yeah, we need the story behind Dougie Doug, but he's definitely the highlight of the film. I'm getting cold. Just think about it. Oh, he cracks me up.
I love him. And I thought, the more I think about it, when they do the entire, there were a couple scenes that stand out to me as being pretty funny in this. I really like when Irv, because he just does not want to get in with this team, and he's doing sort of they have the big meeting to try and recruit other members.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just scaring them not straight. To. Yeah. Just, look at this. Look what happens to your bones. Look at these accidents. Yeah.
And the last literal last frame on the little slideshow video, whatever thing that he plays, is like three bobsledders dead. He literally is like, you're gonna die. And then, of course, cut to the room. Lights are back on. Literally everybody's gone.
Yeah.
And I just love the look of Sanka, who's like surprised that everyone's gone. I'm like, you had to have heard this mass exodus. But he's just super funny. Yeah. But John Candy, he doesn't want to join up right away. They basically harass him into doing it. And I just thought that whole montage was very cute, too, of them like hanging around the bar. Oh, my God. Yes, the Sled God. It's my favorite.
I like the term Sled God. I thought it was going to stick for the entire movie, but it really is just for those first.
It does. He says it a few times. He just says it passing. Yeah, says it in passing, kind of like, you know, yes, sir, Sled God, whatever. He says it in passing, but he says it a few times, and I love it. But I love that he does the little baby bow and says Sled God. So cute. But I love that they kind of harangue him a little bit to just realize they're not going away. And one downer note I have to say is they have this one scene in that whole thing where they sort of startled John Candy, and he grabs his chest and is like freaking out and is like a heart attack moment. And, you know, and if you don't know, John Candy did pass away from a heart attack. But not only that, like a few months after this.
Yeah.
So I saw that moment and I was like, oh, like too real.
Yeah, but it wasn't his last film, but this was the last one that was released before his death. He had two more, I think, come out that he was working on either right before he passed or during, unfortunately.
Yeah. And I think this was the last one that he shot timeline wise or something like that. But yeah, it was definitely one of the later ones and really rough to see. I mean, they say a lot of stuff in this film that's very insulting to him. There were multiple people who are like, what happened to you? Oh, my God.
You and they show an go.
Older. Right. And they showed an older picture of him where he obviously looks younger and more fit and all these things. And it's kind of an ongoing bullying of him that I really don't like. That's one of the things I will say for this film. that doesn't hold up. One for accuracy, like, for example, let's just knock out of the way that all the other teams are supposedly not receptive to them at all, hate them. And I remember on rewatch being like, people aren't like this. Like, people are not this openly mean and bullying. This is such, at least, especially as adults, like, this is such bullshit. Or really being like, is this real? This is crazy. And that is not true. They were actually welcomed with open arms. People thought it was really cool that they had decided to bobsled.
They didn't have to get bribe somebody to use a sled. Somebody just came forward and was like, hey, you guys don't have a sled. Here you go. We want you to participate.
Yeah, they had like a sled, but it didn't qualify. And so they needed like a backup sled to qualify. And this other team literally gave it to them. And that's so impressive and so cool. And I think that camaraderie could have been a really cool story as well. I'm just saying. But
yes, yeah.
But yes, this is kind of to create conflict, and these guys supposedly hate him and all this stuff, or hate them as a team and all this stuff. But there's some inaccuracy around that, but there's also the bullying toward him and others throughout, and the team as a whole, that I just didn't think held up. I was like, this is not entertaining as much,
and I hate how they roast each other. Yeah, I don't think it needed to be driven in some capacity by racial issues. I'm not saying that that didn't play a role in real life, but it apparently wasn't as pronounced as it was outright in the film. It did give us that line, though, that I do really like, where Malik Yoba's character says, you know, we're just different and people are afraid of what's different. And they don't come right out and say what that means, but I'm assuming that's what it's leaning towards. Like, we're not supposed to be here in some capacity of that word.
Yeah, I think they did maybe a good and bad job, depending on your perspective, of not making it about race. So, but it's about them in the whole, right? Which is, of course, inclusive of race. You cannot ignore that. Yeah. It is, these are Black men from Jamaica, and they are from a warm climate, and this is an icy winter sport. So I think it is the combo of all of those factors, in which, of course, race is included. But I don't think, at least the way it's presented in the film, that it is specifically about race only. It's the combo of all the things. It's also the combo of their coach is somebody who cheated and lost a gold medal as a result of his cheating. And so there's a lot of deep disrespect for him as a leader. And this leads to one of his great speeches in the film. So, like, we'll cut to, they qualify, they fundraise.
Interior, they daytime. Right.
Interior daytime, exactly. They do all this great fundraising. The point is, they get to Calgary, right? Which is when the first Jamaican bobsled team makes their appearance, right? They get to Calgary 88, and they've had their practice runs, their training, they're doing all, there's all these great montages about all that as well. It's very fun and cute to watch. But even though they make the run in the appropriate amount of time, so sub a minute, to qualify for the games, they're then immediately disqualified. And their coach, Irv, knows that this is about him, knows that this is about him and his cheating history and the bad reputation he brought to his team, which is implied as the U.S. more than likely. And he goes in and lobbies on their behalf to basically the board, or the alliance, as they call them, and says, like, he has this beautiful speech, which I won't try to emulate, but he's essentially like, listen, I've fucked up. You're totally right. But these guys, who have never been involved in this sport and have worked their ass off, didn't. They don't deserve your prejudice. They don't deserve you not acknowledging them. They did everything right. You should let them compete. And if you haven't heard this speech before, or you don't remember it, I would argue it's one of the very, very motivational, very sweet speeches in this type of film, period. It's very well done. And John Candy, who's largely known for comedy, of course, does a really good job of delivering this speech, I think.
Yeah, I think this is what you just said is similar to what I said last week with The Replacements. It's like, I don't think that's a perfect movie in any capacity, but it is fun to watch. And then it has those nuggets of sports inspiration, which I think a lot of what you take away from a sports film are those moments. Like, if you have those quotes and those speeches that you can pull out and they stick with you in your head, I think that's always going to put you head and shoulders above some of the other junk that's out there.
For sure. And I think this is, again, a testament to the writing, where it was very well written. And to your point about quotes, they have so many great quotable lines. And, you know, harkening back to the nostalgia for me, my family and I love this movie. We would quote this movie all the time. like all the time. This was one of the ones we quote, like a Sandlot. It was something that we quoted all the time. But one of my favorite quotes from this film is, well, now having rewatched it again as an adult too, is not as funny and silly, but I love that John Candy is talking to his buddy from the old US team and he's telling him, hey, like, I don't care what you think, this guy, these guys are lightning, right? Like he ran the, this, he was going to go to the Olympics as a sprinter, blah, blah, blah. And the guy responds and he says, but can lightning run on ice? And I just love that line. I think it's so clever and beautifully written, but it also sets up the entire question of the film, right? Of can these guys who are incredibly talented translate that to ice? And I have to ask you, I have so many questions about bobsledding. How did bobsledding come to be? How did we get here? This is an ice chute. It is a metal tube. There are four guys in it. I need details. I need somebody to explain to me how this happened. This is such a strange sport.
I have done zero research on this, Mackenzie, but I think I can explain it pretty easily. When you live somewhere where it's fucking cold all the time, you have very limited options for the shit that you can do, the sports you can play outdoors at least. So add that into the fact, I don't know where bobsledding was invented. I'm going to guess probably Canada or maybe Russia or somewhere like that. But there's a lot of drinking that goes on as well. So when you're drunk and you're bored and it's cold outside, somebody was probably just like, you know, sledding's fun. What if we just made it real fast and like down a chute and tried not to die? And probably a lot of people died, I would wager. But that's my best guess.
First of all, that's the best guess I've heard so far, because I have prompted more than one person with this question, including somebody who was born and raised in winter sports and like did snowboarding and the half pipe and all these things. And I just remember looking at it and being like, I still don't understand how we went from skiing and snowboarding to bobsledding and even sledding to bobsledding. Again, we put it in a metal tube and we said, let's make it crazy. And also, where did we find these ice chutes? That's the other thing I want to know. In a natural environment, this was the crux of it for me. Of a lot of these things are hobbies and winter sports on the regular. People just do this for fun. Do you know anybody who just bobsleds for fun and then decided to do it professionally? Because I fucking don't.
I don't know anybody who does either of those things.
But I don't understand how it happened. It's like golf is a hobby and now it's an Olympic sport. Skiing is a hobby and it's an Olympic sport.
You just added breakdancing. I'm actually excited about that one. You remember how much fun, what was that MTV show that the Jabberwockies were on? I know that's not only breakdancing, but I was a pretty big fan of that dance group show. So I'm excited for breakdancing in the Olympics. Yeah.
They added breakdancing to the Olympics. Okay, the Olympics is just getting weird, is what I'm saying. I'm officially saying that the Olympics is getting weird. But anyway, neither here nor there.
You sound a lot like the bullies in this movie. Like, something's changing. You're not supposed to be here. I don't like this. I did want to shout out. Go ahead.
It reminds me of what's the rhythmic gymnastics? That's another one that like has been around for a while, but is also just like, how did this happen?
It gave us that Will Ferrell scene in Old School, though. But that's true. Either way, I wanted to shout out when you mentioned the running on ice. I did like the scene where they're trying to learn how to use the ice shoes for the first time. And they're on the hockey rink just busting their ass over. And they're interacting with the hockey players. And you see Yule just lay out one of the hockey guys with a hit. And I like when Junior is holding onto Yule's back. And he's like, look at my progress. And then they both fall. Like, that was pretty good. Pretty good scene.
I thought that whole scene was cute. I also like when Yule is like, you know, kind of threatening the hockey guys, like, yeah, that's what I said or whatever. And then immediately falls as well. So
yeah,
lots of gold in their training montages for sure. I also love, again, the lucky egg, especially with sports. I feel a little superstitious vibes as well. I love that he's like, I got to have my lucky egg. I got to kiss it every time. I also extra love that Dougie Doug still has said lucky eggs because they were apparently made of rubber and he kept them. So that's amazing to me.
Yeah.
I also love the hype speech with Yule and Junior. So they go out.
I liked how they pair off. I want you to finish that thought. I'm not going to expand on this, but I really liked how you mentioned earlier that they're the two lesser developed characters of the four, just for screen time's sake. But I do like how they pair off and have their own little storyline. Sorry, I'll give it back to you.
No, perfect. I mean, I totally agree because it's they're the ones who are most likely to hate each other because Yule is so, you know, spicy and angry, but also Junior's the one who tripped all of them and basically made them not make the sprint for the Olympics in the first place. So he's the reason they're there, but he's also done everything he can to make up for that. You know, he literally sold his car, his very nice bougie car, because he's the one wealthy person in this group, and, you know, sells this car so that they can all go. So he's been trying to make it up, and you can tell Yule doesn't want to like him, but he bonds with him. They bond. Yeah. They go out to this bar in Canada, which, by the way, is a country bar. Which, like, why? Why is everything in Hollywood when it's North America of any kind, apparently? It's got to be a country bar. But anyway, they're at this country bar, and Junior is getting, you know, a little bit roasted by these German guys. And again, with the bullying and all the bullshit that I think is silly. But he drags him into the bathroom and gives him this fucking hype speech that is so incredible. Mm-hmm. And he's like, look in the mirror. What do you see? And he hypes him up and he's like, pride, power, and a badass mother who doesn't take nothing off of nobody. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny because he has to like really build him up to this moment. And then he immediately gets hyped up and runs out to pick a fight. And I love that Yule's like, wait. That is not what I meant. But then he's got to come and finish it for him. And it's such a cute bonding moment. It turns into this terrible fight and they all, you know, get in trouble. But it's such a great bonding moment for those two characters, I think.
Yeah. Spinning off of that, I had to double check that this was a Disney movie because he says badass mother like four times. And they also say asshole in this. And I mean, it seems like
they
you
don't
get away
say
with
motherfucker,
one swear.
Though, right? They just say mother.
No, but it's like, I guess
I think
that
you can skate it a little when you don't say the F part.
I remember when I was a kid and hearing, I don't remember if it was like the old Shaft theme song from way back when they would be like, he's a bad mother, shut your mouth. But it's like, I knew what they were gonna say.
Oh, sure.
I don't know if the kids watching this were like,
listen, did you see The Little Mermaid original cut? There's like a dick in the clouds. They do weird shit in original Disney
it's
movies.
Disney. There's dicks in everything.
There's dicks it's in just, everything. Yeah. Exactly.
And now there's CGI dicks. So
they've upped their game. They've upped their game quite a bit. Yeah, but they're such a cute pairing. I totally agree with you. They pair off really well. And, you know, Teresa and Sanka stay, you know, that best friend relationship that they have. But it's cool that Yule and Junior sort of bond and that it gives Junior the oomph to push back on his dad when his dad does show up and say, you have to leave. And that scene is so hard because you can tell he loves and respects his dad and also understands where his dad is coming from as far as like he wants the best for him. He wants him to be successful. But he hasn't made his opinions known for a long time. So it's not even entirely his dad's fault that his dad thinks he's entitled to do this, right?
Yeah.
And so him pushing back on his dad, he does it in a way that's very like, do you see me? This is what I want. And this is what I'm going to do. And it's not, I don't think, handled disrespectfully. That's the thing I like about it. It's just, I'm making you aware, Dad, that I'm going to do this. I get to do this. I'm a grown man. I'm going to do this. And I think it's a really cool moment for him.
And this is, I realize that I've been pretty positive, I feel like, despite what I said at the start of this episode about my feelings, because I do see a lot of good things here. And as I said, if I'd seen this in 1993, I probably would have fucking loved it and I'd be giving it. But I'm just saying, if I'm speaking from a personal perspective, I'm watching this at almost 40, so I can. But this is one of the points where I think the story, for the sake of drama not being the same as what happened in real life, I think I faulted a little bit here, because even though his standing up to his dad means a lot in the sake of the story in this, it's just, it rings a little weird to me, because you're literally at the fucking Olympics competing for a gold medal, but your businessman dad is just gonna fly to Canada from Jamaica just to tell you you're not allowed to be in the Olympics and compete. It just rang phony to throw this storyline in as though a father, regardless of what his job is, would be upset that his son was competing in the Olympics.
I think the thing too to understand though is that the timeline is a little weird, and if I recall correctly, they haven't qualified yet when he's coming up there. Like, he sends them a telegram and says, hey, you have to come back. And then he doesn't come back. And then, so I think he flies up there to stop him, because again, at that moment, nobody has any proof that they're going to qualify or that this is going to work. Like, this is all a gamble at this point. And I think he's assuming this is kind of a joke, much like everyone else is. So I think that's where that comes from, of him showing up And even though, again, it is the Olympics, I totally agree with you. Like, hey, I'm gone to the Olympics. I should be able to qualify. But this is the qualifying race for them, which you hear a little bit more of the granular details about that later, is they haven't run any other qualifying races. This is their last ditch chance to get qualified. And I think his dad is assuming he won't for a number of reasons. I mean, all the reasons everyone else thinks they won't. But then he does qualify. And what you don't realize right then, and you find out later, is he stays and he is their, you know, their fan basically at that point. Once they qualify, he's there with the Jamaican bobsled t-shirt and he's there for that final infamous race and he's still cheering them on and thinks that, you know, the world of them. So I think it just took him a minute to come around. I don't think his dad's like the bad guy. I think that this kid is kind of a quiet kid who hasn't pushed back on his dad for years and years. And his dad didn't understand this thing that he wanted to do. And now by the end, he sort of gets it. But I get what you're saying.
I suppose that makes sense if it was just a timing factor of when different things, maybe I'm misremembering when things happen, but another example, this might be the Jamaican, whatever, he's the Olympic commissioner, sports commissioner, who doesn't want to sponsor them early in the movie, and then just sort of fucking disappears. But then for the sake of a heartwarming moment, he just walks into the bar at the end, and they're like, we didn't think you would make it. And he's like, well, young lady, we've got a bobsled team. I was like, fuck that guy. Like, maybe that's the point, is we're not supposed to like that character still. But that just felt like a moment that put no effort into resolution.
I totally agree with that one for sure, because that guy is a douche canoe. Well, not even a douche canoe. I understand why he didn't fund them and all the things, but for him to bandwagon at the end is definitely very annoying. Of like, yeah, the bobsled team. And I said out loud when I just rewatched it, I was like, you mean the one you didn't fund? Mm-hmm. The one that you refused to give money to? Okay. Yeah. And now you get to be a fan? Totally agree with that one. I think Junior's dad had some growth to do, but I think this guy is a bandwagoner and he sucks.
You know who doesn't suck is Sanka picking up line dancing, because the first scene where it shows him struggling with it, I was like, there's no way. Like, you could put anybody line dancing
100%.
And in like 2 minutes, you know what the move, it's one move repeated over and over again. So I was happy that when we came back to that shot of him, he's got it down.
He totally has it down. And I love that he just commits to the culture. What still confuses me, though, is that the culture is country. I'm just saying, like, why are we in Calgary, Canada, and we're in a cowboy bar, basically? Like, why is that?
I mean,
the
Mackenzie,
shit?
There are hicks everywhere. And I think
there
I'm
there really
to say
are.
That,
but I just wonder. I totally agree with you. There are hicks everywhere. But do they all like cowboy and line dance? I don't know. Maybe my Texan is showing, because I felt like that was an us thing.
I went to a bar in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which is a large Puerto Rican population. It's a very diverse city, but we ended up wandering into a country bar, and sure enough, yeah.
So you all want to be Texas is what I'm hearing.
That's pretty much what it is. Yeah. Texas wants to be independent. Feels like, again. Anyway, let's not get political.
I was going to say, let's hashtag no politics. Thank you so much. But yes, I think that it's such a cute scene for them to be in that bar and all the things. But the other thing we have to call out, we can't forget before we wrap up, is I love how they named the bobsled. And so they have, that's the eponymous name of this film, right? So there is, they have their trainings, they have their runs, et cetera. And they have their first really bad run in competition where they're trying to sort of emulate the Swiss or the Germans or whoever, whatever that what ends up being. They're trying to emulate their routine. And that's the one where they're bouncing around. They're doing really poor on their run. And they get roasted by the commentators and all of that jazz. But when they kind of have their come to Jesus with one another of, we are Jamaican, we have to stick to our culture.
Do it our way. Yep.
Do it our way. And we have to commit to one another in our way. We don't have to try to be Swiss, you know, which you learn Denise is, you know, he's trying to be Swiss because they're the best ones so far that he's seen. And he's just trying to emulate somebody successful. But I love that Sanka's like, listen, no, like, we're never going to be successful if we're trying to pretend to be people that we're not. And we are Jamaican. And so what you get out of that is, one, the best bobsled name, Cool Runnings, which is incredible. And I immediately, as soon as I was rewatching it, I was like, of course you have to name it. It's like a car. It's like anything. You have to name it.
What did they say? It means something in Jamaica. Is Jamaican the language? I'm being very ignorant right now.
Well, I also had that note as well, because I thought it was kind of silly, because they say Cool Runnings, which
in
I think
English,
you can glean a lot from in general. And then Irv, their coach, is like, what does it mean? And I'm like, what do you mean? What does it mean? It's in English, you dumbass. But Dernice does respond. He says, well, it means peace be the journey. So I don't know if it's just, you know, what they intended to mean versus what it said or whatever. I feel like you can get a lot from Cool Runnings all by itself.
Yeah, and also peace be the journey or peaceful be the journey is kind of bullshit with how their final race goes. So the name didn't work.
The name did not work. But you know what did work? The fucking chant. I love this chant.
Yes.
When I say my family and I quoted shit all the time, this was the quote, right? This was what we would say all the time is this chant. Feel the rhythm. Feel the rhyme. Get on up. It's bobsled time. Cool Runnings. And they take off. And it's so great. I fucking love that every time. It's so fitting.
I have my friend Justin to thank for that because we used to do these drinking Olympics parties like in college and right after college where we would do drinking games and have different countries. And he chose Team Jamaica. Mm-hmm. And he did that chant for Flip Cup. And he just changed bobsled with Flip Cup. It's very creative. But he would sing it every round to start the round. So I knew that chant even before I watched this movie.
I've known that chant since I was an itty bitty baby, I feel like. And I love it. It's still so funny to me every time. And it's so inspiring. It just feels right. I literally have in my notes on this film when I watched it over again was this shit is so wholesome. The whole movie, I just felt like the whole film was so wholesome. And that moment of them coming into sync with each other and having their chant and their really beautiful bobsled name, and they look great in their uniforms finally as well. Mm-hmm. I just thought, oh, this shit is so wholesome, and they come full circle and they kick ass. And of course, they crash, which you can't overlook. It is a really, really sad moment in this film. And that's the part that you mentioned at the beginning. That is, there's still that's footage from their original race of they did, you know, crash and all those things happened. But what I like about it is in the film, you know, they show them literally getting up. And I love that Dernice is like, we have to finish the race. We have to finish the race. Mm-hmm. And decides to walk it all the way to the end. And they're finally being acknowledged and clapped for and all these things.
Yeah.
Which I will say feels a little abrupt from some of the folks clapping.
Again, but the moments that just do not land as far as development, like you've earned our respect after two fucking more races than you had a day ago.
Right. Sure, you earned our respect because you crashed, you know, like, and at that point, you know, nobody has the postmortem on the crash, right? Nobody knows that it's the screw that loosened the blade, that then the blade goes flying and they crash. But they were having a beautiful run up to that point. So I think most people assume mechanical failure. You can say that. But yes, they don't have that proof. They haven't, you know, endeared themselves per se to especially at least the German team. And that guy is the first slow clap in the movie. It's the German guy who's been roasting them the whole time.
I mean,
time.
I guess it just turns out that it's hard for Germans to be portrayed as bad guys. They've just done it so rarely ever that they're like, they can't do it in movies. It's hard to believe. Anyway, I was going to say another slight, I guess I have to separate the based on the true story component from the actual story being told. Because I think if I thought this was made up, then I probably would like this movie a little differently. But I am tying it
to
what really
happened.
Did you check
it first, though? I think, is that my question?
I think I was IMDBing and, like, searching, Googling stuff while I was watching. Of just, oh, did this really happen? Did this really happen?
Well, that's where you did it wrong. I say that as somebody who does that all the time.
But I would have been, like, irritated, I think, if I went on afterward and found out, oh, it wasn't a mechanical reason that their sled failed. Like, they were just going too fast and tipped. And, oh, they didn't actually pick up the sled and carry it across the finish line. They just walked off. Probably really upset. Like, I know it makes for a better movie, but I can't help but tie it to the true story, and that bums me out a little bit.
I mean, I both think you're doing it wrong and doing it right, because I do that all the time as well. So, but I do think for movie sake and emotional impact sake, yeah, you lose some of that comes with it. But I have to asterisk this before we go, otherwise we're going to lose our entire audience. Germans are very nice. I had this exact same conversation with somebody this week where they were like, well, Germans are assholes. And I was like, no, they're not. Germans are super nice, which is one of the main reasons why when I watched this, I was like, this is not real. Like, these type of people are not this big a dick.
No. Germans are, in my interactions, Germans are very direct. It's just a style of communication. But they, I have laughs with Germans and like I enjoy time with them, but they can be very direct. So if you're a very take everything personally and like, why aren't you like showing me manners and like doing these pleasantries? Mm-hmm. It's just straight to the, especially if you're in business, that's probably where it comes from. But it's just a difference in communication styles, honestly.
I'm a very direct person. So I think that's why I like Germans. I'm like, you guys are
Americans
cool.
Fucking talk too much. Look at us. So
I was going to say, you know? We're literally here talking too much. And I always talk too much. Jesus, I'm in sales. But yes, all that to say, I totally agree with you. I think you have a real true story version and you have a movie version, and that definitely affects your perception of the film. Mm-hmm. Having seen the film when I was younger and not knowing it was based on a true story, at least at that time, I always loved it and I thought it was great. And one big final note I will add is that I think this movie holds up very well, actually, and not even just for the nostalgic pieces. As far as it's easy to worry about, is it too racist? Is it too prejudicial? Is there something that doesn't land or hold up anymore because it's misogynistic or what have you? That happens with a lot of movies of this age and older, right? And so I was a little worried about that on rewatch, and I thought it held up very well. I thought overall it was very wholesome, and I was almost pleasantly surprised by that. So it still ranks pretty high for me. I thought it was a great movie.
That's fair. That's fair. So did you want to slap a ranking on it?
I would like you to tell us, you know, is that the totality of the things you didn't like? The real life versus the film version? Or like what was the thing that you didn't, that I think you didn't jive with?
Of all the movies that Disney has chosen to remake in the past decade, I feel like this would get a good modern take on it. I think, first of all, it didn't need to be if this was a different studio, I think the movie would have been able to push boundaries a little bit more, and as opposed to being a Disney child, like children's film that had to sort of follow these similar story beats. It's like when you watch Marvel movies now, they have these beats, you know how it's going to go. And I think that the other thing is a lot of the humor, again, when I was 9, if I had seen this, probably would have laughed at a lot of this, but as an adult, I was like, okay, we got a toilet joke in the first 20 minutes. We got a butt joke. Where's the fart joke? I kept waiting for a fart joke to like round out the three.
That's what you're upset about. I know. Didn't get a fart joke.
So right from the get-go, I was like, this movie's a piece of shit. But yeah, I just think a lot of the humor didn't land. I think there were a couple things that were strange, of the joke of him having a kissing booth, but then his girlfriend walks up.
His girlfriend's right there? And that is one of my notes
she's
as well.
She's okay with it. Like, yeah.
Also, I think it might be his wife, but anyway, either way, terrible.
And then it's just, you know, when you've been watching other movies for the last 30 years, you start to predict things, and it's okay, well, now that Sanka gets in the kissing booth, guess what? It's not someone he finds attractive, and she doesn't have teeth. That's hilarious. Like, as a kid, it's a kid's movie, so I can't admit, again, personal for me is when I'm watching it now, if I was rating this as a 9-year-old, it would probably be like a 9. But as an adult, first time, I'm going to say the story is very good. Similar to what I said about Killers of the Flower Moon, I think the story is well worth telling. And I think there's enough inspirational sports stuff here to really make it a good watch for me. But I don't think I'm going to go back and rewatch it because the experience wasn't as fun as I would have liked it to be with the humor and whatnot. So I would slap, like, you've probably, after talking about it for almost an hour and 15, I guess you've talked me into raising it. I was originally going to say like a 5.
Oh,
but it's
one that
6.
Hurts. And also I'm happy to hear that I had to raise it a little, but that makes me sad too. Wow. Yeah. No, I mean, I hear what you're saying a little bit. I do. I feel like I accept it even now for what it is, which is a sports movie that's a little bit cheesy. And that way I can really enjoy it. But I think, again, I have the nostalgia piece as well. I can't forget that, really. And I think I would give it like a 7.5 or an 8.
Okay.
And I think it would be closer to 8 if for no other reason than, I think, 2 pretty critical speeches throughout. And they're both by John Candy's Irv. And it's the big one where he fights for them in the panel. And then the other one where he's explaining why he cheated to Dernice. And I think that that is so impactful of, like, if you're not enough without a gold medal, you're never going to be enough with it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's such a good message and it's a good story and it reads very genuine and he delivers them both so well and he really defends his guys in this really, I think, beautiful way. So yeah, I think it would tip it a little bit to me like 8-ish because I love the writing and I love the performance of those kind of like key moments in the film for sure. But also
I definitely hear you.
Nostalgia plays a role.
Yeah, I hear you. I was going to say two things. You can't be the Russian judge this week because it's the Soviet Union in this. So that's why you're scoring it higher than me. That's my first theory. My second one is that bringing nostalgia into it, it reminds me of when we watched Halloween Town in October. Ugh. And you and I had never seen it. But there are people that fucking love that movie. So I think it would be hypocritical for me to be like, you know, Halloween Town sucks because I'm watching it at 39, but Cool Runnings, I'm going to give it a pass. So I think, as a first-time watch, I'm gonna say like a 5.5. I'm on the thumbs up side of Rotten Tomatoes. Like, yes, watch it. Let your kids watch it. It is a fun watch for kids. But as an adult, I don't want to watch this again, please.
Well, I think objectively, Halloween Town sucks. So, oh,
yeah,
and
I think I gave Halloween Town like a 3 or a 2. So yeah, that again, and another Disney movie, right? Like, they have rules you have to stick through and they go with sometimes very predictable plot beats. And it hurts a little more when you know it's based on a true story and they're just throwing shit in there to make it more interesting.
I mean, yeah, Disney remakes a lot of things and adds a lot more little oomph to it. So I totally get that. But I think overall, it's still a very watchable film and a lot. Again, you guys voted for it. Like, you guys beat out Space Jam for this movie. So I think you guys feel similarly to me, to be honest. But would love to hear, if you haven't seen it or you didn't vote for Cool Runnings and you rewatched it, what were your thoughts about it? Because I'm curious how people, especially people without the nostalgia, do you all feel like Lamar? Or is it really nostalgia that's key? You know, I'm curious. Yeah. I'm curious. But all that to say, we have wrapped up our sports month. We have to do this again, I think. We had so many.
We learned how many damn movies there are out there that people want us to cover. Yeah.
I was going to say, we got a whole list of shit that we have to cover now that we did not have time to cover in this month. So I think we'll pepper them in. We definitely have Sandlot on the books, so no worries. Mm-hmm. But I think we got to pepper in a few of these other ones because people wanted us to talk about a lot of them. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But, okay, we have a new theme for April, though. So we've got to have you come back next week for next month's theme, which is Inaugure April.
You got it on the first try. We talked about this pre-recording.
Oh, my God. Are you so proud? Yeah. Are you so proud?
So good.
Y'all, I told Lamar 3 times. I was like, I'm never going to get it on the first take, and we did it. Oh, but the whole theme behind this is things that Lamar hasn't seen or I haven't seen. And we're going to make recommendations to one another and then we're going to review them together. So that, I think, will be a super fun month of us just alternating back and forth. So I'm super excited. So come back next week for us kicking that off in the month of April. But for now, go have a drink and watch a thing. Cheers.
Cheers.